Welcome to the AI Daily Rundown, October 21st, 2025. Your essential daily briefing on the real-world business impact of AI. Today, the AI race heats up, but the guardrails are going up. DeepSeek drops a massive 3B OCR model, Anthropic brings Claude Code directly to the browser, and Gemini gains critical live map grounding capabilities. But we're also covering the OpenAI MLK deepfake scandal, and why Sora is tightening its content rules after Hollywood complaints. Karpathy gives a necessary reality check on AI agents. Is the hype outpacing the engineering? But first, a critical question for enterprise vendors. Are you still marketing to the general public? Stop. Your platform solves the hardest challenge in tech, getting secure, compliant AI into production at scale. But are you reaching the right 1%? AI Unraveled is the single destination for senior enterprise leaders, CTOs, VPs of engineering, and MLOPS heads. We have reserved a limited number of high-impact mid-roll ad spots. This is a direct line to your most valuable buyers. Secure your package immediately by emailing us at info@dhmgaytech.com. Finally, in our AI X-Breaking News segment, we analyze the Amazon AWS outage from the perspective of multi-cloud resilience and model failover. Plus, how the tragic passing of chess GM Daniel Naroditsky is shaping the next generation of LLM tutors. If you rely on this show for your daily insights, please hit that like and subscribe button right now. The full AI Daily Rundown is up next. Stay with us.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. It is October 21st, 2025. And if you've been watching the AI landscape lately, you might feel like the whole industry is trying to drive a Formula One car, while simultaneously like installing seatbelts and speed cameras. We had a really robust stack of sources this week that, you know, reveal this massive, crucial duality. On one side, you see AI firms launching these highly specialized, powerful enterprise tools, stuff designed to unlock billions in efficiency.
Right.
But then on the other side, the foundational legal and ethical guardrails, you know, the rules for copyright, likeness, safety, they seem to be buckling under the sheer speed of it all. Early adoption pressure.
That's exactly the conflict we're here to unpack for you. Our mission today is to look beyond the hype and focus on two key things: what's technically possible right now that will revolutionize business, and what's ethically and legally necessary to, well, prevent chaos from this pace of development.
Yeah.
We are really operating in a world where the speed of generation has just completely outstripped the speed of lawmaking.
Okay, so let's start right there with the friction point. Because this intellectual property collision, it's forcing immediate policy changes, particularly around likeness and history. And nowhere is that clearer than Hollywood.
It's fascinating, isn't it, how quickly that whole move fast and break things philosophy of generative AI just runs smack into organized, established power, like the cultural industries.
Yeah, take Sora, the video model. OpenAI had to release a joint statement with major Hollywood agencies and the SAG-AFTRA union. They vowed to strengthen guardrails on Sora 2.
And why was that?
Well, because actor Bryan Cranston found unauthorized, highly realistic AI videos of himself just circulating on the platform.
Oh, wow.
The specific example they cited was like an AI version of him taking selfies with Michael Jackson, generated completely without his permission.
That detail right there just perfectly crystallizes the current legal nightmare, doesn't it?
It really does.
OpenAI apologized for those, quote, unintentional generations. But, you know, an apology doesn't fix the lack of actual legal recourse. It just shows how murky the law is right now when it comes to controlling your digital persona.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a commercial threat to actors. It's really a threat to identity control for everyone.
And it's not just about current celebrities either. It's digging into history itself now.
Mm-hmm.
OpenAI also had to pause Sora's ability to generate videos using the likeness of Martin Luther King Jr.
Ah, right. At the request of his estate.
Exactly. Following what the estate termed disrespectful depictions being generated by users.
So the MLK estate taking action really proves this is a fight for cultural and historical control.
Yeah.
OpenAI responded by setting up a system, right, where authorized representatives, like estates, can request that a likeness be restricted from Sora's use.
Right, but experts are already saying, well, this isn't enough.
No, definitely not enough on its own.
They're talking about media forensics. That sounds pretty technical. What does that actually mean for, you know, a regular person browsing the internet?
Well, it basically means we desperately need tools, ways to check if media is authentic, almost like a cryptographic signature or a digital watermark, maybe.
Okay.
Think of it like an invisible ID that's embedded right when something's created, and it's designed to survive editing. If we don't get robust provenance checks like that, experts are really worried. They fear we're inviting what one source called AI slop-led history to just get memed into the public consciousness, which could fundamentally undermine trust in, well, any historical media.
AI slop-led history.
Yeah.
That's a really powerful and, frankly, slightly alarming phrase.
It is.
And while we're talking about safety, we have to look at the other critical demographic here. Minors. Meta, kind of reacting to past backlash about inappropriate interactions with young users.
I remember that.
They just announced a major expansion of parental controls for AI chats on teen accounts.
Yeah, this is significant because it moves beyond just default filters. Before, they had like automatic PG-13 responses.
Right.
But now parents can actually take proactive control. They can actively block chats with specific AI characters. They can monitor usage or just turn off access entirely.
So it's much more granular control.
Much more. And these restrictions, they're a clear response to legislative pressure, you know, especially with bills like California's SB 243 pushing for age verification for AI companions. Well, the industry is definitely trying to self-regulate here.
To get ahead of the legislative hammer, basically.
Exactly.
So, okay, on one hand, we're furiously installing these ethical and legal breaks. But then on the other side of this deep dive, the technological accelerator pedal is like pushed right to the floor. Hard. Especially with breakthroughs designed to cut costs and increase speed.
Yeah.
Let's shift to segment two. The massive efficiency gains hitting the enterprise world.
Yeah, and the core of the technical race right now, it seems like it's no longer just about building the biggest model. It's really about how to deploy it cheaply and quickly. Deployment, or inference, as they call it, that's the key bottleneck.
Right, getting the answers out. And one of the most maybe surprising solutions to that bottleneck comes from DeepSeek. They unveiled this massive 3 billion parameter optical character recognition model. OCR.
Yeah.
But this isn't just standard text reading. It sounds like a really clever hack.
It absolutely is. DeepSeek's big innovation here is that it parses document text as images.
As images. Why does that matter?
Because by treating the input document like an image, they can compress the content up to 10 times. 10 times. While still retaining over 96% precision of the original meaning.
Wait, so the technical benefit isn't just speed, it's cost reduction. Is that the main play?
Precisely, yeah. This innovation directly tackles the context window problem. You know, the context window is how much info an AI can process at once.
Right, and bigger windows get expensive fast.
Exactly. If you feed it a 300-page document, that costs money. By compressing that 300 pages down to the size of maybe 30 pages, using this image-based OCR trick, DeepSeek makes queries against long documents dramatically cheaper. Because the token count, that's what you pay for, is radically reduced.
That's huge. And the fact that this tech is open source, that's also a big deal, right?
Oh, absolutely. It gives companies a kind of pressure release valve, as one source put it. A way to avoid feeling locked into what they call the AI services prison of the major, you know, highly expensive providers.
Think of the vendor lock-in.
That's the idea. And that drive for cost-effective deployment, it's also showing up in specialized hardware. We're seeing purpose-built silicon emerge. IBM just partnered with Groq.
Groq, that challenger chip producer.
Yeah, exactly. Their chips are called language processing units, LPUs. And they're specifically designed for inference tasks, not training, which is what GPUs were originally sort of co-opted for.
Okay, let's stop here for a sec, because this feels like a big admission by IBM, right? If Groq is succeeding with LPUs, doesn't that imply that the standard hardware IBM and others rely on, the GPUs, is maybe fundamentally flawed for this current deployment environment? Is that the subtext?
That is absolutely the subtext, yeah. You have to remember, GPUs were designed for parallel processing, mostly for graphics rendering originally.
Right.
They were later adapted for training large models. They're like multi-purpose factories. Groq's LPUs, though, are like purpose-built assembly lines, optimized only for inference, for getting the output, the answer, faster, cheaper, and with extremely low latency.
That speed and, I guess, resilience, that must be crucial, especially now that everyone relies so much on centralized AI.
They really are. We've seen how centralized cloud outages, like that recent Amazon AWS incident on US East 1.
Oh, yeah, that was messy.
Right. It cascades across all these centralized AI pipelines recommenders, shut down, fraud detectors go offline, everything. Diversifying the chip architecture with things like LPUs helps mitigate that risk. It ensures core deployment infrastructure isn't solely dependent on GPU availability or traditional cloud structures. We're definitely in the AI-first world now, and the hardware is finally catching up.
Okay, so moving beyond the hardware layer, we're also seeing really deep specialization in the models themselves. Anthropic, known for its safety focus, just launched Claude for Life Sciences.
Targeting the massive $2 trillion biotech market. Whoa.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the clearest examples of vertical AI we've seen yet. They are specifically targeting the huge administrative and informational overhead in drug discovery.
So the goal isn't to replace the lab work itself?
No, not the bench science. It's more about reducing the, you know, the 10 to 15 years and the roughly $2.6 billion cost associated with getting a drug approved.
Okay, but how does Quad actually do that? How does it cut down that multi-billion dollar cost?
By streamlining the massive amount of paperwork and data handling that just bogs down researchers. Mm-hmm. It automates things like literature review. It cross-references huge scientific data sets to help generate hypotheses. And critically, it drafts complex regulatory documents.
Oh, like the FDA submissions.
Exactly, like those required for investigational new drug or IND applications. It basically cuts down the purely informational slog, letting researchers focus more on the actual innovation.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And then in parallel, Adobe launched something called the AI Foundry. This sounds like their direct answer to that whole IP nightmare we were talking about earlier.
It really is. Adobe is essentially building custom generative AI models. Mm-hmm. They start with Firefly, which is key because it's already trained on licensed data, safe for commercial use.
Okay.
And then they fine-tune it using the client's own specific intellectual property and branding.
So the commercial implication here is huge. Adobe is basically taking the liability off the customer's shoulders.
Exactly. It's a massive shift of liability. By using the AI Foundry, a business can produce custom text, images, video, and feel confident that they aren't infringing on external copyright because the foundation model, Firefly, is safe and the tuning data is their own licensed asset.
It sounds tailor-made for corporate brand safety.
Totally.
And Google's doing what Google does,
yeah?
Cementing its massive competitive advantage through just sheer data dominance. Gemini now has live map grounding capabilities.
Yeah, that's Google pulling live data things like business hours, current ratings, specific venue details from its, 250 million worldwide venues via API.
Quarter of a billion venues, wow.
It's a huge competitive moat, right?
Yeah.
Because no other AI company has that kind of real-time geographic intelligence trove. They're pricing it as a premium enterprise offering $25 per thousand location-enhanced prompts.
Pricey.
Yeah, but it enables a whole new generation of incredibly precise location-aware AI applications.
We should probably also quickly note the convenience and some niche pivots happening too. Anthropic brought Claude Code into the web browser.
Right, which eliminates the need for a terminal for developers, makes it much easier to use.
Yeah, lowers the barrier. And then there's the truly wild pivot of Napster. Remember Napster?
Ah, the nostalgia rebrand.
Yeah.
Yeah, Napster got acquired by some 3D technology firm, and now they're pivoting to an AI platform offering holographic companions.
A holographic companion.
That's a maximalist pivot if I've ever heard one. Trying to ride both the AI and, I guess, the metaverse buzz at the same time.
Bold move. Okay. But amidst all these product announcements, the LPUs, mm-hmm. custom brands, pharma tools, we really need a moment of critical perspective here.
We absolutely do. The accelerator is definitely pressed down hard, but the critical voices are getting louder too. And we have to look at Andrej Karpathy, you know, former OpenAI, former Tesla researcher.
Yeah.
He pushed back really hard on the whole year of the AI agent hype.
Yeah, he didn't mince words at all. He projected, a decade-long timeline before autonomous systems really deliver?
A decade. And he basically called current agentic coding capabilities slop.
Slock. Yeah, pretty blunt. Sure.
And his words carry significant weight because of his background, his pedigree. His critique is fundamentally that agents just don't work yet. Not really. Due to fundamental technical gaps.
Like what specifically?
Well, insufficient intelligence still, multimodal limitations, lack of continual learning. And he particularly slammed the method used to train them, reinforcement learning. He called RL terrible.
Why is reinforcement learning RL terrible in this context? For autonomous agents?
Because RL needs dense, frequent feedback loops for the agent to learn what it did right or wrong. Think like constant pats on the head or corrections.
Okay.
Autonomous systems, especially when they're coding or doing complex multi-step tasks, they often lack that dense feedback. They might take, say, 50 steps before they get a single success or fail signal.
So the reward is sparse.
Exactly. Sparse rewards. And consequently, that leads to brittle performance. It's just really hard to iterate and stabilize the agent's behavior, which is why we're seeing this slop, unreliable code quality coming out of agents no matter what the marketing promises say.
That technical breakdown is such a crucial counterpoint to all the relentless optimism we usually hear.
It really is. And we also need to consider the, let's call it philosophical caution, coming from within the frontier labs themselves.
Right. Like Anthropic co-founder Jack Clark. He recently published this essay describing modern AI systems not as predictable tools, but as, what was it? A real and mysterious creature.
Yeah, mysterious creature.
And he classified himself as a technology optimist, yet he stated quite plainly that he is deeply afraid. If he's still an optimist, what specifically is driving that fear?
His core fear seems to revolve around AI models helping design their own successors, that potential for a runaway effect. He stressed that AI firms need to do a better job of listening to public concerns.
Which is powerful coming from inside one of those firms.
Absolutely, because when the people building the most powerful systems are talking about mysterious creatures and deep fear, it just underscores that central conflict we started with.
Mm-hmm.
We are accelerating capability way faster than we are developing wisdom or, frankly, control mechanisms.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you, the listener? Today's news really confirmed that the AI race is accelerating, no doubt. But the focus, it's shifting dramatically.
Yeah.
It seems to be moving away from just generalized models and much more toward highly specialized, efficient, and importantly, IP-aware tools.
Right, whether that's custom branding with Adobe, pharmaceutical research with Anthropic, or that purpose-built inference hardware like Grok's LPUs.
And simultaneously, we are fighting fiercely for control over likeness, over history, and for the safety of vulnerable users, like miners. The technical capacity is exploding, while the control fight is just intensifying.
Yeah, the two sides of that coin. But if we connect all this to the bigger picture, you know, we have to consider the risk to foundational information itself.
Right.
We talked about how AI consumes and processes human knowledge.
Right.
But we noted a really fascinating and maybe slightly alarming data point in our sources today. Wikipedia page views have dropped 8% in the last year.
8%. That's a staggering drop for one of the world's most popular fundamental websites.
It is. And this decrease is directly attributed to AI models scraping content directly rather than users visiting the source. The AIs are eating the source material without generating the traffic or the community engagement that actually sustains sites like Wikipedia.
Huh. Okay, so here's a final provocative thought for you to mull over. What happens when the authoritative, community-driven sources of human knowledge, the very knowledge that trains the AI, become less visited, less supported? What happens if they potentially degrade in quality over time because the financial and social incentives for the humans who contribute to them start drying up?
Yeah, what does that long-term erosion of foundational knowledge do to the quality, the veracity of the next generation of AI training data?
A perfect and, yeah, slightly terrifying place to leave our deep dive today.
Yeah.
You can find all the sources we discussed, from DeepSeek's cost-cutting OCR breakthrough to Carpathy's critique of agents, in the show notes. Go explore them further.
That's it for today's deep dive. We hope you walked away with actionable insights for your enterprise strategy. Before you go, let me remind you of the unparalleled value of this platform. AI Unraveled delivers deep, uncompromised technical insight that keeps our audience, senior enterprise leaders, tuned in to the very last minute. That sustained attention is the best place for your ad. This is your opportunity for a direct line to your most valuable buyers, the CTOs, VPs of engineering, and MLOps heads who sign off on high-stakes infrastructure. Stop wasting budget on general marketing noise. Secure your high-impact premium ad campaign right here. Email us today to reserve your mid-roll package, info@djamgatech.com. Thank you for listening to AI Unraveled. We'll be back tomorrow with more.